Hi, my name is Dr. Sthembile Mbete, and this is an explanation of all of the legal questions that you may have around the election and the announcements of the results afterwards. It was a free and fair election. There were some administrative issues, of course, but overall, I think it is fair to say that this was a free and fair election. When you think of what a free and fair election is, the sort of political science textbook definition of what a free and fair election is, it includes a number of things. It includes the legal framework of the election. Are there laws, electoral laws, that everybody has to abide by and that are applied fairly and equally to all parties that are participating or contesting an election? It looks at the election management bodies, whether those bodies are independent, whether they are conducting their work in a way that is independent and applied equally to everybody who is participating in that election. You look at the rights of the individuals who are voting in the election, so citizens that are casting their vote, are they able to do so with no interference on them? Are they the same rules applied to all parties in terms of being able to register for the elections, in terms of being able to put forward their candidates, etc.? Are people able to participate in the campaign fairly? Are people able to access the media to be able to advertise and to campaign, to show the public their platform? Are they able to, and then in the voting process itself, can people, you know, vote fairly without interference and secretly without anybody trying to interfere with what they're doing? And then there's the issues around the role of the officials at the voting stations and then the counting process. And it seems that in South Africa, after this election, the big issue that has been raised by political parties is their concerns about the counting process itself, that it wasn't done transparently and that it wasn't done fairly. And there's two complaints really that have been put forward. The first one is that the election results from different voting stations weren't properly captured into the system, into the IEC's IT system, and we did have that period. I think it was on the Saturday or the after the election where the system went offline for some time, and so there have been these accusations that the result were tampered with while the system was offline. There have also been questions that no, the votes that a particular party got at a particular voting station weren't captured properly on the voting slip, on the result slips that are completed at each voting station, and therefore those slips then weren't captured correctly into the IT system. Both of those issues can be tested within our system. On the issue of the data capture being done incorrectly, the slips that are completed by political party, that are completed by officials, by the counting officials at each voting station, are signed off on by the party agents that are present while the count is going on. So the result slip is not completed until everybody who is there, who has witnessed and observed the count, agrees that it is an accurate count. That copy of the result slip is pasted, a copy of that slip is pasted on the door or on the wall of the voting station itself to be seen publicly so people can come and check what the result was. But that slip is also then, once it's transported to the IEC's local office, scanned onto the system, and then the actual physical copy is also kept. So if the data capture was done incorrectly, there is a way to go check whether that is the case or not. On the second thing of the results slip having been completed incorrectly or tampered with in some way, when the results are agreed upon and are completed on the results slip, usually all the party agents of political parties who are there, as well as the observers, take a photograph of that slip. So if somebody at a later stage changed a number or anything, that can be easily picked up and then rectified. And so the point is this, that free and fair elections does not mean that there were no errors in an election. It does not mean that there were no administrative failures in an election. What it means is that where there are issues, they are rectified and there are systems and processes to be able to rectify them, and that whatever those issues are, they do not have a material impact on the overall result of the election, and that they were not so widespread as to make it impossible for the majority of voters to cast a vote that reflects their true intention, and that it is not the case that the people who were contesting the election were hampered from being able to contest the election as freely and as openly as they needed to. So this issue of material disputes in the Electoral Act, sections 52, 54, and then 55 deal with the issues around electoral disputes. And section 55 deals with objections, and the wording, the language is really important here. It's an objection that is material to the result of the election. Now, in our system, the result of the election is the number of seats that a party gets in whatever the legislature is that they were contesting. So for example, if for all the parties that were contesting for the National Assembly, there were 52 parties this year that were trying to get seats in the National Assembly, the result of the election is the number of seats that a particular party has received in the National Assembly. For the different provincial legislatures, and there were different numbers of parties that were contesting different legislatures, in Gauteng, for example, there were 45 parties that were contesting for the provincial legislature in Gauteng. It is the number of seats that a party has received in the Gauteng legislature. So when we talk about the results of the election, we're talking about the number of seats that parties received in that particular house, whether it's a National Assembly or a provincial legislature. Now, when we then are talking about the objections, it's was the issue that you are objecting to, so that the results were captured incorrectly, or the result slip was filled in incorrectly, or that not all the votes were actually counted properly. Did that issue, that there were 100 votes that weren't counted properly at a particular voting station. We had 23,292 voting stations this year. So the issue is, was the fact that those votes weren't counted, will that change the overall seat allocation in the National Assembly or in a particular provincial legislature? So will the filling in of a slip incorrectly in a particular voting station change the overall seat allocation? And that is the material impact. So if a particular transgression or error, and those are serious because we do want all of our votes to count, right? So I'm not dismissing that. But will that issue change, or would it change the overall allocation of results? And that is what is considered a material impact on results. And that is the standard, that's the threshold that is laid in our Electoral Act, that an objection can only be taken forward, or can result in the halting of an election outcome, or the changing of an election outcome, only if the issue that has taken place will have a material impact on the seat allocation after the election. It is possible to challenge the results. So it is possible to lay objections, and the initial objections are considered by the Electoral Commission itself, by the commissioners who go through all of the objections and what the details are and what the evidence is of those objections. And they then see whether there is a case to be heard here. If there is, if they do see that actually there is something that needs to be looked at here, then they recommend whatever the remedial action would be. So for example, I think there were 10 voting stations where the results were recounted, where the votes, the actual ballots were recounted, on the, it would have been the 30, the 1st of June, the 31st of May, 1st of June into the 2nd of June before the results announcement. So in that case, where the commission said, actually, there is something here that needs to be looked at. Let's take out all of the ballots again and recount them to make sure that the results align with what's on the results slips and what's been captured online. So there can be those kinds of remedial actions that are taking place. If a particular party or a particular candidate is not happy with the outcome of their objection, they can then go to the electoral court and appeal the outcome of that objection. The electoral court is the court of first instance for all issues to do with elections. So you can't go straight to the constitutional court or straight to the Supreme Court of Appeal. You have to go through the electoral court on all issues that have to do with the election. And people can do that. But what the law also says, which is really important, is that an issue is being appealed to the electoral court around the results of a particular election does not mean that the result of the election is suspended. That the appeal of a decision at the electoral court does not suspend the results of the election. And so you can't stop the announcement of the results of that election, and you can't stop all the things that follow from the announcement of the result, because our electoral law is written for the system to continue and to prevent any power vacuums. And so for those people who were not happy with the decision that was made by the commission and have decided to challenge things in court, that is their right to, they have the right to, but to do so as citizens of the country, but that they are taking that action does not suspend the results that were announced by the IEC on the 2nd of June. And I think that's an important thing to remember, is that the results as they were announced are legitimate in law. And whatever the legal process is that continues, it cannot stop the process of governance continuing after the election. If you're not happy with the decision of the electoral court, then you can apply for leave to appeal the decision of the electoral court, and then you would follow then the steps that are provided for in law around the appeal to either the Supreme Court of Appeal or to the Constitutional Court. But the first court that will deal with any electoral matters is the Electoral Court of South Africa. So what the law says, and what the Constitution says, and what the Electoral Act says, is that within 14 days after the announcement of the result of the election, the National Assembly needs to sit for its first sitting, where the members of parliament, the newly elected members of parliament, will be sworn in, and also where they will elect a speaker, a deputy speaker, and the president of the republic. At provincial level, the provincial legislatures sit, and the members of provincial legislatures, what we call the MPLs, are sworn in, and they elect a speaker, and they elect premiers for their provinces. And this has to take place within 14 days after the election. There's been this big question about whether the National Assembly will be able to meet if not all members that have been elected as members of parliament are present at the first sitting of the National Assembly. And the big question is around Section 46 of the Constitution, which says that the National Assembly is constituted of between 350 and 400 women and men elected to be members of parliament. Now, legally, the fact of election to being a member of parliament, and the fact that your party has put you on a particular list and that you are within the number of members of parliament that have been elected from that party, that in itself means that you are now a member of parliament. So the operative word here is elected. 350 to 400 members of parliament that are elected to be members of the National Assembly. And that is really important, because those people are members of parliament now that the lists have been submitted by the Chief Justice to the Secretary of Parliament with the names of all the people from the different political parties that are going to represent their parties in the National Assembly. Those people are MPs and they've been elected. Now, they can start doing their work as MPs once they have taken the oath of office. And that is something that is then going to take place on that first sitting of the National Assembly. Now, if some of the members of Parliament are not able to be present when the National Assembly sits for the first time and are unable to take their oath of office at that first sitting of the National Assembly, that does not prevent the National Assembly from going forward with its work for that day. Quorum, so the number of people that have to be present for a decision to be made, of the National Assembly is a third of members of the National Assembly for all decisions that aren't voting on a bill or voting on an amendment bill. For issues that are voting on a bill or voting on an amendment bill, it's a half. It's 50 plus one. It's 201. So in this case, you need to have 134 members of the National Assembly present for there to be voting on the speaker, on electing a speaker and on electing the president. And so if the members of a particular party decide that they want to boycott that first sitting of the National Assembly, it will not prevent the work of the National Assembly from continuing. It creates a lot of administration for Parliament and from the administration of Parliament, for the Secretary of Parliament and Secretary of the NCOP, but it does not prevent the work from continuing and from going forward. Because imagine if, you know, think about COVID times, right, where at any given point in any organization, there would be many people down with COVID or with the flu. If we were going to go by this rule that there have to be all the members of the National Assembly, or at least 350 members of the National Assembly, it means that you would delay the work of government indefinitely, and you would create a vacuum of power. And our constitution and our electoral laws are written deliberately to prevent a situation where there will be a power vacuum indefinitely in our system. And I think that that's something to remember, is that the way that our laws are written is to prevent there being power vacuums, or our laws are written around this particular issue is to prevent there being a power vacuum that prevents the business of government from continuing, and that prevents the process of governance of the country from continuing in any way. And I think this is probably a lesson that was learned from the transition period, where there's a number of political parties that took a while to come around to participating in the 1994 election, and the concerns about what that could have meant for governance going into the future. And so a lot of our law is written for the governance process to continue. So when that Parliament meets on the first day, they will be able to elect a speaker, they will be able to elect a deputy speaker, they will be able to elect a president. And then all of the other business of Parliament that continues from that, and the other business of the executive that continues from that, so the inauguration of the president, is the next step then after the National Assembly first meets. And then there's going to be that president announcing their new cabinet and the process of handover that comes from that. And then after that, there's going to be the first sitting, the formal opening of Parliament, where the State of the Nation address is going to be given, which is likely to happen in mid-July. Around, I would guess, the 11th or the 18th of July, but it could be a bit sooner, it could be a bit later. And so, basically, South Africans voted and chose who they chose, and the politicians need to figure out what kind of governance arrangements will come from the choice that was made by South Africans. But they are required by law to make those decisions within a certain period of time and to undertake certain actions within the time that is allocated, and they cannot veer from those legal constraints. And I think that's important when we're looking at the actions that have been taken by both the IEC, by the Chief Justice, by the Secretary of Parliament, is that they have not taken decisions because they are stubborn or because they don't want to listen to public opinion or they don't want to hear anybody's complaints. They're taking the actions that are required of them within the law, and the law sets quite tight time constraints for what they need to do and for how they need to do it, and that is what we are seeing them do. Those people that then want to challenge decisions to the Constitutional Court or to others can continue. They can do that, certainly, but that cannot prevent the people who have been given legal responsibility to do certain things from undertaking their responsibilities under the law. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast on all the questions and the legal issues around the election and what comes afterwards. My name is Dr. Stem Lembete. It was lovely to have you with us.